On today's Compassion Radio.
I don't think it's a luxury we add on. I think it is a basic requirement to be a going church, or else we're just parking on someone else's nickel.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do, and this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio. How much, really, should we be giving to missions? It's a lot easier in this day and age, right? Hello and welcome to Compassion Radio, your daily report on the state of global mission. We're glad to have you along with us today. Question: what is a missional church? Would you say that your church has a mission mindset? Does it make a practice of fulfilling the Great Commission? Norm's guest today has ministered worldwide for decades, helping churches discover what missions means in a new era. And he's no ivory tower scholar. He too is a pastor of a local congregation. If you've ever wondered what missions should be like in the 21st century, then you tuned to the right place today. Here's Norm.
All right, our guest today on Compassion Radio is Dr. John Huffman, who until recently served as senior pastor of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in Newport Beach, California, and who is now serving the Kingdom of Christ around the world as a minister at large, speaking, lecturing, mentoring others in an exciting and multifaceted ministry. John, welcome to Compassion Radio today. Pleasure to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Norm.
John, your resume is at least a mile long. You have been a major force for Christ in the evangelical world and beyond for decades now. But today we're going to focus on the why and the how involved in the fact that you have poured yourself into the task of developing a congregation that was passionate, and I know it still is passionate, about global mission. Let's start with the why. Why did you give so much time and effort into reaching out beyond your local community?
Well, I'm convinced that we wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for persons who took seriously missions. And the church at Antioch is my favorite church in the New Testament. They were a brand new church. They had a brand new pastor and a brand new teacher. They had Barnabas and a fellow named Saul of Tarsus. And people were being added to the church daily, and they were being taught, and they were being held accountable, and they were sending money up to Jerusalem for the food for the hungry. There were some problems in the church in Jerusalem of a famine, and they were praying together, and they were listening to what God had to say, and the Lord said, set apart Saul and Barnabas, the work to which I called them. And most churches would say, we just got a brand new pastor, we just got a brand new teacher, and we haven't even started the building program yet, and give us some time. But they prayed and fasted some more, because I don't think initially they liked the idea themselves. But that was Paul's first missionary journey, and we today are followers of Jesus because of the faithfulness of Paul in those first, second, and third missionary journeys, and we'd be parking on someone else's nickel if we don't faithfully do the same.
Yeah, tremendous biblical examples there. John, what about the biblical mandate itself? How irresistible, in a sense, is that biblical mandate to those of us who follow Christ that, hey, yeah, our own households and across the fence in our local community and in the community at large, yes, that's important, but even beyond that, the global reach of mission, well, it's a mandate. Is that not true?
Well, yes, I'm convinced we are instructed to go into the world and share the gospel with everyone. And to me, I take that very seriously. In fact, I think a church becomes a sick church that basically luxuriates in its own situation. In fact, one of the things that I've done through the years to be sure that we don't lose that, because, you know, money is a big issue in local churches, and is to make sure that a certain percentage of the annual budget goes to missions. And if we come on lean times, if anything gets cut, everything gets cut equally. And the church I serve in Newport Beach, we upped the ante to 25% of our budget had to be involved in World Mission for Others, things that went on off our campus that were not part of our payroll, not part of our own local operation. And we held fervently to that, and sometimes it was very difficult to do that. But that was the only way you can maintain it. Otherwise, people will say, well, now we have to take care of our own here first, and we'll, in tough times, the first thing to get cut is missions. We just didn't allow that to happen.
John, before we get to the how issue in more detail, just tell us a little bit about the results of your efforts as a pastoral leader. Tell us about St. Andrews, and I know the percentage, you just gave it to us, but the total was, it was pretty high in terms of your annual budget, and your reach, literally, I mean, just global, completely global.
What we did was, of course, I have had a heart for missions through the years because of I was raised in an environment that thought globally. My dad is one of the founders of Youth for Christ. I was exposed to Harold John Ockenguy and the great missions conferences at Park Street Church in Boston, where my dad was his associate, and then I worked with him through the years in my own adult life and would bring missionaries into our home. My parents did, and I've always done it through the years. And I worked in the travel business, so I was traveling the world as a young man and was seeing missions. I saw the early work of World Vision with Bob Pierce, as well as when I became a Presbyterian, visited various mission things. So when I went to St. Andrews, it was a good, strong church. This was 1978. It had a budget of $500,000, and of that, $150,000 went to missions. Missions, they defined and as Presbyterian, and they gave in lump sums according to the Presbytery quota, the General Assembly mission, for the Presbytery mission, and for the Synod mission. Plus, they had, I think, two line items of $2,500 apiece for Frank Laubach's mission and for the local hospital, which we founded, Hogue Hospital Memorial Presbyterian. So there was a base to think about missions, and they had personal interest missionaries that would come through Presbyterian and background. As the ministry developed and we saw the need for a building program, there were some of the old-timers that were very critical of me for even talking about a building program because they were convinced it would kill missions. And I said, I don't think it will. In fact, if we're strong in our local outreach, I believe the people will have the generosity to continue missions and you'll see it grow. And it did. And it was interesting, over the 31 years I was there, the budget of the church, as I say, started at $500,000, grew to about $8.5 million, with 25% of that going for missions. And in addition, we did a $46 million building program, of which about $38 million was paid off. The first building program was paid off, and the mortgage burned its entirety within about 8 years of its completion. And the second building program, which was about a $28 million one, all but about $8 million was paid off by the time I left a year and a half ago. But and what I saw was the greatest years of mission growth were also the years of the greatest growth in terms of the building responsibilities and obligations the church took on. Because there was an energy, there was an excitement. I think churches die when they just simply are interested in themselves.
I couldn't agree more. You just destroyed a whole bunch of excuses, John, with your recounting of your experience here at St. Andrews. But I'd like, before we get into the how aspect of it, I'd just like to comment on something you said. You grew up in an environment, in a church environment, that had missions at the top of the list. I did too. So did my wife. Guess what? Compassion Radio has a global vision. St. Andrews Presbyterian had a global vision. That's really important, isn't it? The impact of parents on children, of churches, on its constituents and its young people, etc., etc.
A pastor needs to have that vision. And a pastor doesn't have to be raised in a home that had the vision. A pastor can discover that vision oneself by doing travel, by being involved prayerfully in both Bible study and in church history. I mean, you study the history of the church, it's been a mission church. So our precedent is there. The mandate is a biblical mandate
I believe, I don't think it's a luxury we add on. I think it is a basic requirement to be a going church, or else we're just parking on someone else's nickel. I love to find a parking space that has money on the meter, and I've never come out and replaced a quarter for someone else. That's what we're doing spiritually if we're luxuriating the fact we either are a missionary or we need a missionary, really.
Well, hopefully by now you know that Compassion Radio is a going kind of ministry. Come along with us. This month is a pretty adventurous opportunity. What's the answer to desperation? Simply hope. And that's exactly what this month's Door of Hope project is all about. You can help us continue the work of saving abandoned children from the streets of Johannesburg. We've been helping Door of Hope to rescue babies every week from certain death as their impoverished or drug-addicted mothers give up hope. Before Berean Baptist Church stepped in, dozens of newborns were abandoned to the elements each and every month in this African metropolis. Now, Pastor Cheryl Allen and her congregation couldn't let that go on, and their solution has saved over 1,000 souls in 2 decades. In a neighborhood marked by high crime, high fences, and razor wire, here's what they did. They literally cut a hole in the wall of their church compound and installed a double-doored incubator. Newborns can be anonymously deposited inside. A sensor notifies church staff, who immediately retrieve the child and provide medical care and nutrition. This creative approach has so greatly moved our Compassion Radio audience that we've built a group home facility for these orphans in a safe neighborhood outside the city center. Compassion Radio partners have sponsored hundreds of these kids over the years. So we ask, would you like to join them? There are more infants this year just waiting for you to act. By God's grace, Berea has never had to turn away a baby. Let's help them make sure that stays true today and tomorrow. Here's how you can help. Your gift of any size will help provide the medical attention, education, and food that one or more of these precious kids need. All of that can be provided for one child for only $38 a month. Our special thank you this month for your support of this important project. Of $25 or more is Philip Yancey's important new book titled, Why? The Question That Never Goes Away. For decades now, Philip Yancey has been the church's go-to person for dealing with crisis situations, such as the Columbine Massacre, Sandy Hook, and the Fukushima nuclear disaster. His personal experience with those who are bereaved has taught him to treat tragedy with equal measures of compassion and truth. Philip Yancey is one of Norm's favorite authors. Read this book and find out why. You can reach us at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And 24/7, you'll find us on the internet at CompassionRadio.com. Contact us today to let us know you're standing with us as we rescue babies in South Africa. And now, back to Norm and his guest, John Huffman.
I've never come out and replaced a quarter for someone else. That's what we're doing spiritually if we're luxuriating the fact we either are a missionary or we need a missionary, really.
Absolutely. You're the leader. How did you instill this vision in your people? You inherited a church with a missionary vision, but you expanded on that. How did that happen?
There were the elements there, and they were very proud of their having had a vision outside of themselves, or a few key lay people that were dedicated to it. I don't think the whole church was. I don't think they were as aware of it. I built on the commitment of those few lay people and then just brought a constant procession of people through that were involved in various kinds of exciting ministries. And part of my call was that they were, I wanted to have a specific number of days a year on the church's payroll where I could minister elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And that raised the eyebrows of some, but that was one thing that attracted the committee to me, was that I was already involved in those kinds of things in Pittsburgh at the First Presbyterian Church and in Key Biscayne, Florida, prior to that. So there was a precedent in my own history, but what I wanted was, for the first time in the ministry, to have it very clear what they were willing to share of my time with the outside world, and it came out to be 30 days a year of the church's time that I could minister elsewhere, and if I did any additional, it would be out of my own vacation study leave time. And then I would come back, and I would give a report. I gave a Bosnia report when I was World Vision in the height of the Bosnia situation. I gave a China report when I taught at Nanchang and Beijing seminaries. I came back from other kinds of mission trips and would report on it. And finally, one woman was tired of it. She left the church and said, "I'm tired of hearing your travel logs." I would do that maybe a couple times a year. But many other people got excited about it.
That's going to happen, isn't it? To a church leader, you're going to get criticism from some quarters when you have that philosophy of ministry.
That's right. When I became, I was asked to become chairman of World Vision, I finally put it to the session. I said, I will not be able to sort of determine the days I'll be away in a way they don't seem as obvious to you. So they discussed it as a session. It was about a three-hour meeting, and the vote was two-thirds to one-third to have me do it. And then when it was the time for renewal 3 years later, a brand-new group of elders had rotated on, and they had the same discussion, and the vote again was 2-1 for me to do it. And the argument was, John comes back fired up, and we get fired up. And the others said, yeah, but, you know, really what we have here is more important, and we need to concentrate on what we're doing here. But that spirit did not prevail. And but the challenge always is, Norm, when the economy goes down, then the question is, all right, now we've got to keep our own local base strong. There are two extremes. One is the person that is against. They say, we have enough need here. We can't waste the time and energy and money for out there. But there are those at the other extreme that get converted to World Missions, and they don't want anything to go to the local ministry. Mm. And I have to explain to them, wait a second, you'll have no ministry out there if there's not a home mission base right here. What happens on our campus within our walls is a mission-sending base, and it needs to be strong for us to be strong out there. So it's a push-shove dynamic.
John, especially now, but I know all through your years of ministry, you've seen a lot of the world, you've seen a lot of the American church and so forth, and you're certainly seeing it now in this new venture. In your opinion, are American churches where they should be in terms of this global vision for their outreach? And if we're not, what's holding us back?
It depends on the local church, whether that vision is there or not. I think there's some churches that are spot on. I'm a little bit concerned with all the mission teams that go out. I think they are very important, but I think in many ways they dare not become a substitute for missions, and in some cases they are, because people are going out that don't understand the language, that are going for 10 days or 2 weeks, and they come home and they think they've done their thing, and in my view, they become familiarized with missions. And that's the building blocks for greater mission outreach, not a replacement for the support of people who have done the study, understand the language, and are there for the long haul. Often, the teams that go out take more time from the missionaries on the field to entertain them and provide an agenda for them, and it detracts from their own work. So I think that's something one has to be careful of, that we don't develop an American church that is just a traveling church, not a serving church. And people come home excited about what they have experienced, but it sort of stops there. There still needs to be the in-depth type ministry.
Boy, that's a really important point. I'm so glad you spoke to that, John. As I think about global mission and local churches, it just came to my mind. My wife and I were in Havana in Cuba, and we went to a city just outside of Havana called San Antonio. We were told it's kind of the movie capital. It's sort of the Hollywood of Cuba. And there was a so-called house church there, which had grown from 4 people to 1,500 people. And in talking to the young pastor about his vision, he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, "Norm, we are a church who's taking the gospel to the whole world." And I remember, oh, man, this is Cuba. Talk about need. Talk about trouble in the local situation. Talk about a lack of resources. I mean, it's incredible.
I just came from Cuba myself in December, and I visited several churches, but one is a thriving Baptist church that had a global sense, and another was Assemblies of God church. It was just dedicated a new building, and they were throbbing with energy and excitement for both their local ministry and world mission.
By the way, we're speaking to John Huffman, until recently pastor, senior pastor of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church in Newport Beach, and a man, a pastor with a tremendous heart for the world as well as for the local community. John, I participated most recently in the aspects of the Lausanne movement, and we've been involved with InterVarsity and their missions conferences and all of that, and these are tremendous worldwide movements. But there's something that troubles me. It seems to me that there's a lack of connection between the visionaries and the strategists in the area of world mission and local pastors and lay people here in America. I'm not placing blame on anybody, but I'm wondering, we come back from an exciting meeting of the Lausanne movement, let's say like in Cape Town, and it is very, very difficult to communicate what has happened there. People here don't seem to know anything about it. I'm concerned about that.
I would say this. Yeah, it is discouraging when you come and you're keyed up from a great gathering of people like we have, the 4,500 people from over 200 countries, and it was youthful, and it was gender diversity. There was such a great gathering with the leadership being represented of the whole world. On the other hand, Norm, I'm not as bothered by that. It's like if you buy a car, I don't have to, I don't know that I've ever been to an automotive plant and seen how it all comes together. And I think sometimes we who are technicians in the field are excited about what we do when we gather to do the strategies. The key thing are people coming to faith in Jesus Christ. Are they growing in their faith, and are they being deployed in servant ministries to others? Now, if a great conference like that happens and people come back and then that becomes a museum piece and nothing happens after that except the fact that there was that event, that would be sad. I don't think the world has to know about that event and be all excited about the event itself. If you're saying, is there ignorance in the United States? Is there a waning in interest in missions? I'm afraid there is. I don't think the United States is as healthy a place as we'd like to think we are spiritually. And I think the Koreans are putting us to shame. I think some of the people in some of the suffering countries like Cuba, which you just mentioned, not that the church is that large in Cuba, but the fact is where there's been suffering and pain, those that remain faithful have an energy. The church is growing by leaps and bounds in China. We know that. We have the statistical realities of that. My philosophy of history is a optimistic, pessimistic, optimistic philosophy. Optimistic about what we're created to be by God. Pessimistic for the fall and sin and even inertia and failure to do everything God would have us do. But optimistic about the fact that Christ is victor. In the final analysis, Jesus Christ is sovereign, and history is on his side. And the question is, are we going to be on his side in helping implement that history?
That's very helpful, John. Listen, in conclusion, I'd like to ask you, you referred to this moment in history. Why is global vision in our churches today so important at this time in history? Is this a Kairos moment for the church in America?
I'm going to say that every moment is a Kairos moment. I think the danger is for us narcissistically to think that this is the moment because we're at the center of this moment. And I believe a lot of biblical prophecy has been interpreted around the narcissistic dimension of, after all, it must be during my time that Jesus returns. At the same time, we need to learn and live as if he could return at any moment. And today is the first day of the rest of our lives. In a way, that's an empty-sounding statement, and it's a very profound statement at the same time. So, yes, every moment. The only day I know I have for sure is today, and I need to be faithful in it. If you're not in ministry today, if you're not a missionary now, you'll never be in ministry, and you'll never be in mission unless you change something. And, yes, it's a Kairos moment for us. To me, the bottom line is faithfulness.
Oh, that's good.
Not hype. Some of the most faithful, long-term servants of the Lord would not win any church growth contests because they were just faithfully serving Jesus Christ.
John Huffman, thanks so much for being a guest with us on Compassion Radio. You've enlightened us greatly. Been a pleasure to have you with us today.
Great being with you, Norm. God bless you.
For over two decades now, babies have been rescued off the streets of Johannesburg, South Africa, as drug-addicted or impoverished mothers give up hope. Before Berean Baptist Church stepped in, dozens of newborns were abandoned to the elements each and every month in this African metropolis.
Now, Pastor Cheryl Allen and her congregation couldn't let that go on, and their solution has saved over 1,000 souls in 2 decades. In a neighborhood marked by high crime, high fences, and razor wire, here's what they did. They literally cut a hole in the wall of their church compound and installed a double-doored incubator. Newborns can be anonymously deposited inside. A sensor notifies church staff, who immediately retrieve the child and provide medical care and nutrition. This creative approach has so greatly moved our Compassion Radio audience that we've built a group home facility for these orphans in a safe neighborhood outside the city center. Compassion Radio partners have sponsored hundreds of these kids over the years. So we ask, would you like to join them? There are more infants this year just waiting for you to act. By God's grace, Berea has never had to turn away a baby. Let's help them make sure that stays true, today and tomorrow. Here's how you can help. Your gift of any size will help provide the medical attention, education, and food that one or more of these precious kids need. All of that can be provided for one child for only $38 a month. Our special thank you for your gift of $25 or more is Philip Yancey's important new book titled, Why? The Question That Never Goes Away. Philip Yancey is one of Norm's favorite authors. Read this book and find out why. You can reach us at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And 24/7, you'll find us on the internet at CompassionRadio.com. I'm Bram Floria. We'll see you tomorrow.